while many of you might not always agree with him in theology or the way he necessarily represented the gospel, he was certainly a man of great humility, and he was certainly a man who took a lot of risks, and he is somebody who I think gave a lot of different kinds of wisdom to many of us over the years. It's a great loss for the family, a great name for the saints who come. Just wanted to really take a note, a moment to just note his passing. So we are throughout Lent going to be doing a series on prayer. And last week, Joe did some introductory work with you about what is prayer, et cetera, and I'm kind of going to be part B of that. And then the rest of the time, we're going to be looking at Jesus praying, and we're going to walk with him in his journey of prayer. But these first 2 weeks are sort of general information and some thoughts about prayer for those of you who might not be as comfortable praying or who are early on in that journey of prayer. And for those of you who are a little further along, maybe you might have some wisdom throughout this message or some insight that you have in that might be helpful. I thought it might be helpful today to start with talking about what prayer is and what prayer isn't. Because there's various ways that we think about prayer, and so to start with this piece right here, this piece was supposed to be here today, but it's not quite dry enough. The arts team has been working on this piece. It stands about this high, and you'll hopefully see it next week, so we took a picture of it. And the arts team made this piece together, collectively. We all did different parts of it for our series on prayer. And I think one of the things that I want to say that prayer is not, this art piece represents, prayer is not about performance. Prayer is not about performance. It's really a lot more like the arts team creating that art piece. We came together, we each kind of did our own little part, and we kind of put the parts together. We just offered it as a gift. Right? And you're kind of offering yourself as a gift to God in prayer. So it's not really about performance. I used to have a colleague friend of mine who was a person who many people love to hear him pray because he changed his voice and he used a bunch of words that were very different than how he would talk in everyday language. And he'd get up to these words and he'd be like, "Oh, God, it's ever and ever so forth." I don't sound like the voice of God in Charles Heston. He would use his voice, and some people thought, I think what it conveyed to people was that this is how you pray. You had to, like, change your voice, and you had to use these other words because God didn't understand, like, the normal language that you use. So we had to use these and vowels and big multiple syllable words. And I think that's pretty much the opposite of what I would like to talk with you about in terms of prayer. Because I think that what God is really seeking for is relationship. And when you're seeking relationship with something, what you want is a person's most authentic self. You know, like, God sees you when you get out of bed in the morning. You know? So it might be too bad, but he loves seeing you when you get out of bed in the morning. He sees you, God sees you at your very lowest moments. I think our prayer is bringing the real you. It's like, it's the one place you can take off any mask that you feel you need to wear in order to be accepted or loved, where you can be completely honest. You can be your most genuine self. You can bring to God your worst and all. Because to think for a moment that you can pretend with God is falling. God knows the number of hairs on your head. We're going to say it. He knows what you're thinking and what you're feeling. The question is, do you? Are you able to get in touch with it? Are you able to own, like, the darkness? Are you able to own the confusion? Are you able to own that you don't know what to do? Are you able to own these things? Because the moment that you can get to your most authentic self and to your deepest core is the moment that God can begin to do some really wonderful things. But you have to own it first. So prayer is really not about performance. It's bringing the real you, the realest you that you're in touch with, into conversation with God. The other thing that I want to say that prayer is not, is it's not offered alone. Jesus intercedes for us. The Spirit's our companion in prayer. The Spirit gives us words when we don't have any words. I mean, how many of you have gone to prayer and go, I don't know what to say? Like, I don't even know where to go. Like, I'm not even sure. Sometimes it's because the pain's so great. I remember visiting a woman in the hospital who had just found out the fourth time she had a fourth cancer. And she said, I have no prayers left. And I said, you know what? You don't need to pray. I'll pray for you. Spirit will pray for you. Just try to, at any point, just make yourself available to love. And so there's this sense that when you don't know what to say, or you're afraid you're going to say the wrong thing, or you're going to not have the right words, or you only have feelings that you can't even get in touch with, and your thoughts are unformed, that's okay. Just sit with God in that place, and let Spirit, let Jesus kind of speak for you. Sometimes you just don't know how or what to pray, so just sit. And let this wind, this fire, this rush that we know Spirit is like a mighty ocean pray on your behalf. This is what Jesus said in John. I said these things to you while I'm still with you, but the Advocate, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you everything and remind you of all I have said to you. So the Spirit's going to intervene on your behalf. The Spirit's going to teach you. The Spirit's going to take over when you are just stuck, or there's not enough, or you're insecure, or any of those things. So, what is prayer? Prayer, it seems to me, is our first language. It's our first language. It's babies helping feed me when they cry. They're crying out to the universe, right? They're crying out to God. We cry these things out to God up until perhaps our last prayer, which I hope for all of us is thank you. But this is something Oprah Winfrey said about this being prayer being our first language. She said, what I love about kids is that they come into the world already trailing the breath of angels. I am sure about something, and some of you may say, I'm not sure about that, but I am sure of something. Small children know from whence they came. One of the easiest ways to feel the presence of the divine is to connect with a child. Recently, a friend told me a story about a girl who wanted time alone with her infant brother. Her parents were pretty suspicious of her motives. What if she wanted to harm the new baby? But the big sister was so persistent that the mom and dad finally decided to allow her 10 minutes alone in the room with the newborn. And after they closed the door, she listened quietly. They felt chills when they heard their daughter say, baby, tell me what heaven is like. I'm starting to forget. Tell me what heaven is like. I'm starting to forget. So prayer is our first language. It is innate within us. A lot of things shut it down, but it's innate within us. Secondly, prayer is authentic relationship. As I was saying, what it isn't. It's authentic relationship. It's the reality that we can't hide who we really are from God. God is in us. We're a part of God. God knows the number of hairs on our head. God certainly knows what we're thinking and what we're feeling and our anger and our rage and our frustration and our joy and our lament. God knows all of these things. The invitation to us is, are we willing to be honest with all these things? Are we willing to admit the good, the bad, and the ugly? My mentor in ministry, who I worked with the whole time I was in seminary, he was my supervisor, and he was an amazing man. He officiated at our wedding, and he truly helped me learn what it meant to be a pastor. And he said to me, I can't wait for you to get a few years of experience and we're going to co-pastor a church together. And I was thrilled with this possibility because I knew what I could learn from him. I knew what just an amazing guy he was. I was so excited to be able to do something like that with him. And a couple years in, he got ordained. And he died. He died before his 50th birthday. And I remember, like, part of my brain said, well, you know, Sue, you just have to accept this and move on and trust that God knows what's happening, da da da. And it was, if you go there, what do you miss? If you go there right away, what do you miss? Everything in between, right? You don't do the grief work, you don't do it. And I had this other voice in my head that had worked with me when I was pregnant with one of my kids that I really didn't think I was going to be pregnant with when I was growing up. I was sick as fog, and I was like, oh, but everything's going to be okay. And this mentor said to me, no, Sue, don't go there. Go talk to God about what it feels like to be growing up for the third time, morning, noon, and night. Go to God and talk about what it feels like to have your life interrupted. Go and talk to God about what you really feel. And that voice came back to me, and I'm going, I'm going to go and talk to God about what I really feel about doing stuff. And so as I'm walking down the street, actually running down the street because I have so much energy, I just had to get it out. I'm saying, I am so fit to be tied, and I need him in my life, and I don't think I can do it without him, and I count on his mentorship, and he's the one who answered all my questions, and I didn't know what I was supposed to, and I was like puking, right? It was just like letting it all out, letting everything that was in there out. And you know what? I felt a lot better afterwards. But if you skip that, if you think for some reason God can't handle that, God can't handle it, just go to Jesus. Why the freaking heck, God, can't you take this cup from me? That's honest. Right? Like, have you abandoned me? Like, are you asleep? Like, do you realize what I'm going through here? Right? And if you really need help in that, because you don't know how to get there, you know, like, you may not have permissions to be honest, just go to the Psalms. Read a couple of songs, like in a modern version, just like read a couple of them, and see what they have to say. You'll be like, oh, I know this is the Bible. Yeah, they're serious. They say it like they confess it. And that's what we're encouraged to do in prayer. We're encouraged to not hide who we are, but to have an authentic relationship, because the more honest I can be, the more God can help me, assist me, walk with me, show me, teach me. But if I'm doing this facade thing and I'm telling God everything's going to be okay, well, yeah, maybe everything will be okay, but right now it's not. You hear the difference between the two. Okay? God wants to hear your God honest truth, because until God can encounter you in real relationship, you're not going to be able to have the biggest steps of growth. You might do the baby steps, but man, you can grow a lot faster and a lot more into an understanding of God if you're honest. I mean, you can honestly think that I don't even know if I am praying to anything or anybody. I just feel like I'm kind of sitting here talking through the air, and that's how it feels to me right now. If that's where you are, say it. God can handle it. So prayer is this authentic relationship. I think prayer is also very humble in nature. It necessitates honesty, because we have to acknowledge our humanity. Jim Forbes, a professor at Union Seminary, was once asked to help a student understand the difference between predominantly white and predominantly black churches. The student had experienced, and I totally with this student, a power in the worship of the black church that they didn't often find elsewhere. And Jim, whose background was in African-American Pentecostal church, pondered the question, and then he said, I think it's so stupid. In predominantly Caucasian congregations, people believe God needs them. In predominantly African-American churches, people understand that they need God. Can I say that again? In predominantly Caucasian congregations, people believe God needs them. In predominantly African-American churches, people understand that they need God. And I recognize that that's a generalization, and I don't say it to offend But the question was a general question. They were asking for a general understanding of what the difference was. And there's a truth in those words that's real in my own life in this way. For much of my life, I have found it easier to offer God help than to ask for help. I have found it easier in my prayers to tell God all the ways I can help God, instead of saying, God, I need your help. That can be a tough thing to do, because for some of us, to say we need help is shameful. It's tough to admit that we aren't in control. For some of us, it's next to impossible to turn over our life and admit that somebody is way greater, way smarter, way more wise than we are. But God is like a parent who longs and waits to help his or her children grow and become more. So I think there's a humility to prayer that sometimes we lose sight of. Next, I think it's necessary, prayer, to grow in the journey. Let me put it this way. Is it possible to grow in a relationship if you don't spend time with the other? Is it possible to grow in intimacy if you don't engage the relationship? Is it realistic to expect that we can grow in understanding of God or our God if we don't commit to offering time and effort and resource to that enhancement of that relationship? Our journey with God has ups and downs. It has dark chapters and it has insightful ones. It has bumps and it has bruises. But like family life, or like marriage, or like deep friendships, those are all part of the journey. The bumps and the bruises. I've grown in my relationship with God as I've invested in my relationship with God. When I think I can do it on my own, I generally end up feeling pretty alone and lonely. And when I put forth the tiniest bit of effort in my relationship with God, I soon discover that God multiplies my wee tiny offerings tenfold with insight and blessing and love. So I think prayer is necessary for the journey if we want the journey to keep moving in any forward direction, as it is in any other relationship. We've got to invest deeply. And then I would suggest that prayer is story. Can anybody give me a suggestion of what I mean by that? How can prayer be story? Why would I say prayer is story? I've been doing the work, but maybe you work on this one.
Yeah. I think it's story because, at least for me, God uses the language of the stories of our life and the lives of others to give us the images, to give us the concepts that enliven us, that really get us aware of what we're trying to tell us. It could be a TV show, it could be your husband and then his name comes to you, or it could be a wonderful little boy you come in and
it's a story.
So that to me is what story does.
Okay?
And to feed on that, it's like one chapter at a time.
It's like one chapter at a time, that's right. It's like learning really the story, right?
Yeah. Okay. We might not even know that chapter, you know. He knows the chapter, now we're just in it.
I used to, my mentor, who died, used to say to me, Sue, you are an actress in a play. Just listen to God for your lines, and don't worry about the ending. Wow, that was a really interesting image to take with me as I entered ministry. You don't need to know the next line. God gave it to you. You don't need to know the ending to the play. God does. And just keep listening to God for what your next line is. Isn't that a fascinating image of a story? Okay, what about story? Story. Why would prayer be story?
Well, your life is a story.
Uh-huh.
Your life is a story. I mean, if I think about my emotion yesterday, it's totally different than my emotion today, which will be different than tomorrow. I'm going to be angry tomorrow. So my story with God, I'm serious, my story with God tomorrow is going to be a totally different part of my story today than days past. So if I am to be praying truthfully to God, it's to have all those conversations, the happy ones, the sad ones, between the thankful, the fearful, the anger. That's a part of my story.
And your story in prayer is going to converge with God's story.
Right?
Right? So there's this convergence. Go ahead, Lisa.
So one of the things with the story is the buildup. And so if you're sharing that story honestly with God, it helps you see your own story. It helps you process. But it also can help you, like, lead to that bigger picture moment of, oh, that's why this is going on. It makes a lot of sense now. But if you're not sharing that story and being invested in it and speaking it, you may miss that big, oh.
The aha moment of the story.
Yeah. It's like an essay. Then you have your opening paragraph and the body and then your conclusion. That's your aha moment.
I
like that.
I do that.
You're so
60s.
I do that.
Anybody have a story? Do you want to take it off to
listen?
I
like
that. Go ahead.
This makes sense, but sometimes I say to God, it's me again. Make a little story. And you know, if I don't see that correction sometimes, then I'm discouraged. And I don't even want to go into it. I just assume that he may make
God has a big clue. Well, here again, the same people he meets to assume that honestly, that's true though.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Why prayer is a story. Yes.
Story is way part of our brain. Story is way part of our brain and functions. It's one of the ways we know. It's just a very basic part of every human being. Some people avoid that because it has emotion and feeling very strongly with it. But that, you know, it's different. Very important way of knowing and having relationships.
Okay. Absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the components of prayer. And know that I think this is very different for very different people. So for me, I'm at a point in my life where my life is prayer. Like 24/7 feels to me like prayer. Like whether I'm eating, sleeping, drinking, it just seems all one now. It hasn't always felt that way. And still sometimes it doesn't. Okay? But in my best self and my best days, life is sort of prayer. And God is talking to me all the time. Like God talked to me through the rain this morning. Like it can be anything. That if I'm paying attention, I'm paying attention. But for many people, if you kind of want to kind of center and focus on God, you need some help, okay? And especially until this becomes more habitual. I think you need some help. And one of the oldest helps is this word ACTS that we have used. A stands for adoration, C stands for confession, T stands for thanksgiving, and S stands for supplication. And let me say why I think this has been so helpful for people to do. So Joe and I are taking half of a day, every other week, because there's so much going on at the barn, and we can get so consumed in being human doings that we fail to be human beings. And so we're taking a half a day at Wilford College, every other week, and we're calling each other accountably to silence. So we go to Wilford, she goes one direction, I go the other direction, for the next 3 hours we're in silence. And this past Monday was our day to be in silence. And I got there, in this place, and my brain was so busy. I mean, beyond its normal busy. And its normal busy is off the charts busy the way my brain was. And I couldn't settle down. So I'm sitting at a window and I'm looking outside at this tree. And this tree is beautifully made. And inside this tree is birds and stuff. There are leaves on the trees. So you can see the birds. And I just sat there for a bit and thought, how great is God? Look at this tree. Look at this bird's nest. And I literally spent a long time just thinking about this great God who can make this tree and this bird's nest so awesomely amazing. Then I was looking at the tree and I thought about
the people who are gifted in architecture built these buildings. And then I started watching the students go by and how uniquely God has created human beings, all shapes and sizes and colors and, you know, the whole nine yards. It was just like constantly amazing. And then I thought about the building I'm in. And here I am in a library that's filled with the wisdom, right? So I just allowed myself to go and kind of get out of myself and all my brain is doing. And I started thinking, God, you are so great that you've done this and this and this. And then I started, once I kind of just was in awe of God's mighty creation and all the kinds of ways God has created, then I sat there and I thought to myself, but man, I don't even feel worthy of like all this crazy stuff because I've blown it and I've blown it a number of ways. And I sat and I talked with God about some of my disappointments in myself, some of my disappointments in the people around me, some of my profound sadness, some of the conflicts, and I just kind of owned all this to God. And you know what that did to me? Like I was up here and looking all crazy, and then all of a sudden I'm looking at all this darkness and my whole being is kind of. And now I'm kind of in the dumps because I'm literally thinking about all these negative things. And so then I took my journal and I just started writing some things I was grateful for. And I just started listing things. And I mean, in a matter of 5 minutes, I had 50 things listed out. And it wasn't stuff like general things, like I have a family. It was like, I am grateful for Alicia coming and doing this for me. Like, it was very specific, you know what I mean? I was really giving thanks for very specific. And so it really brought me kind of out of the slump of my darkness into this. And then I tell many of you, and many beyond this community, when I'm with them, that I'll be praying for them. And those are not empty words to me. When I say to you, I'll pray for you, I really intend to pray for you. And so then I just sat and I thought about all the people who were in need or in pain or celebrating or going through something. And I just sat with that for a while. So that is kind of halfway praying. Does that make sense to you? You're kind of going through some things and it's just kind of guiding you into a way of centering down a little bit. And at that point, because all the other stuff had left my brain, I was ready to be silent. Here's how a lot of us pray. God, amen. Right? We do all the talking. We don't give God an opportunity to get a word in edgewise or to respond or anything. Silence is saying that I'm going to take some time and I'm going to get out of my head. Did y'all hear that? I'm going to get out of my head. And I'm going to open myself to listen for God, for Spirit, to speak or suggest, or to sit with me, or to share some time together, and just to be. To center on nothing but presence. And give God a chance to talk. Lots of times, I don't know about saying anything. That's okay. But what I do know is that if I'm here to tell you word from God, God is so delighted that I am sitting in God's presence with God. God is delighted. I mean, you know, Bob and I can be together and not say a word to each other, and I am loving just being with Him. Okay. God loves the same thing. That you care enough about the relationship, you can just be. So Bob and I are in the Nepali Coast. Anybody ever visited the Nepali Coast in Hawaii? It was years, years, years ago. It's a beautiful coast. And most people come into the coast by flying in a helicopter and looking at it. But of course, I live in Bob River, so we hiked into the very long hike, and we're hiking into the Nepali Coast. And we meet this guy along the way, and we had pretty much silence at that point, and we talked with him a little bit, and he was able to enter the silence with us. We were just taking in the nature, taking in everything else. And we get to the Nepali coast, and we're looking at this gorgeous coastline, and we see this plane flying. And this guy, I'll never forget his words, he looks and he says, "There's sea in the coast. We're feeling."
They're seeing the ghost. We're feeling the ghost. That's prayer. It's an entering in. Does that make sense? It's so hard to even find an image that can help you grasp what I'm saying. We were feeling God's creation the entire way in. We were feeling the presence of God through that silence. Our bodies were sweating. We were very well aware of our humanity, right? We were just taking in the sounds and this all around us, and the bugs and the rocks, everything. We're taking it all in. Silence has this way of giving you the opportunity to feel and experience and, let's say, encounter God in God's way instead of always using your words. Is this helping at all as an image? It's like God in God's way instead of your words or your thoughts and your actions. Try this just sitting kind of in the presence. And if you're uncomfortable in the silence, just try to imagine yourself in a place that really is a very safe place for you. Like maybe it was swinging on your swing when you were a kid. Or maybe it was being enveloped in your parents' arms. Or maybe, like, and imagine that you are in that place and it is God with you in that place. Does this make sense? To kind of just experience and live into your silence and that moment with God. I've begun potting on Thursdays on my Sabbath. I'm taking potting lessons with Gable, the one who we did the art piece with. And it's really fascinating because those 3 hours are the highlight of my week as I'm potting. And everybody's making stuff, I'm kind of engaging each other, but when I go to the wheel, it's as though, even though there's noise all around me and people all around me, it's me and God and the wheel and the clay. Now, some of you might be able to about who it was. But as I'm potting this pot and I'm feeling this clay, I don't even look at what I feel like. My eyes are literally closed as I'm feeling this clay and moving this clay. And it's this holy moment that I'm kind of one with the clay, if that makes sense. And God is present. And God is with me in that moment. For you, it may help to, like, claim the wisdom of people who lived before you, taking a psalm with you, or taking great prayers that have been written that kind of help you get in. It might be taking like one little verse and reading it and claiming like one word that, like you're drawn to that word and just sitting with that word in silence. There's a lot of ways to do it. But what I wanted to do today was to kind of help you engage this concept of prayer. Begin thinking about it. Because for the next 6 weeks, we are going to keep company with Jesus. We're going to keep company with Jesus as he prays 6 different prayers. We're going to pray them with him, and we're going to study these prayers. And Jesus, we find Jesus praying many times in the Gospel, but one Gospel in particular, we find him praying 9 different, very specific times. And to get you thinking about Jesus and how intricate prayer was to his life, I've asked some readers to read those 9 texts to you as we prepare to begin this series of praying with Jesus.
He was praying in a certain place, and after he had finished, one of his disciples said to him, "Lord, teach us to pray."
Simon, Simon, listen. Satan has demanded to sift all of you like wheat, but I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail.
Then the
and being in an agony, he prayed more earnestly.
He took bread, blessed, and broke it, and gave it to them.
He withdrew to the wilderness and prayed.
During those days, he went out to the mountain to pray, and he spent the night in prayer to God.
Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, in a certain place. And after he had finished, one of his disciples said to him, "Lord, teach us to pray."
For the next 6 weeks, we will keep company with Jesus as he teaches us.
Decision to somebody else. We just pray prayers that eventually you can do to me. And over the course of my years, I've prayed a lot of ways. I've prayed gratitude, I've prayed heartbrokenness, I've prayed pleading, I've prayed exuberance. I pray when it's discouraged, I pray when it's happy. And one of the most profound juxtapositions of prayer that I'm identifying right now is the Sue Day, was almost a decade ago when my mom was on. Jill and I would sit in conference with her, and I read this beautiful personal about moving over the Spirit's arms. And those prayers were like my brokenness and my pain of losing my mom. And a few days later, after she passed over, my then not quite 3-year-old Randall insisted that on the cake we had for the luncheon, there was a sign that we had for a birthday party that said, "I'm happy for Gigi being in heaven with God and the angels." So that was a prayer of genuine awareness of young person. So prayer to me has always been really, really important. So I ask David, any prayer requests you have before we pray together as a community?
Thank you.